This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
On a Friday, we're coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans Studios. Want to see your loan options, adjust payments, and closing costs online in real time? Rocket can. Last night, Lakers get a victory. Also, the Utah Jazz already in the books for today. The Phoenix Suns did defeat the Wizards 125-112. The Magic do win by 10 over the Nets. You have the Bucks out to a 22-14 lead up against the Celtics. And we have a great game coming right down to the wire right now between the Trailblazers and the Grizzlies. It's a three-point game right now, so we'll keep you updated on that. The man that was on the call for the NBA restart last night on TNT got to call that great game between the Clippers and the Lakers is our dear friend Kevin Harlan. And he's back on the show on CBS Sports Radio. Kevin, always great to talk to you. How you been?
Zach, I'm doing great. Good to be on with you. Yeah, and it's terrific to have the NBA restarting and great games to start it to boot. So it's been terrific so far.
Did you ever get those chicken wings the other night?
No, I wasn't even looking for it. I was just joking around. I'm surprised people were on top of that side comment. But that was one of the early stories, certainly in quarantine. These players were expected to stay, and, of course, you can't dictate what happens in families. And when players have got to go because of a personal emergency in their family, they've got to go. And this was a funeral that Lou Williams is going to, and some guys have gone to some other things that have involved family. And so it was to be expected. I'm sure there's more around the corner. I just think these teams are hoping they can keep guys here and engaged for the next couple months if their team is still alive in the playoff picture.
You know, it's tough to feel confident with anything right now, but I'm actually very impressed how confident I feel about the NBA in seeing a champion actually being crowned this year. I'm so impressed with the job they've done the last few months.
Well, it has been incredible how they have set this up, the money they've spent, the technical know-how, Zach, that is involved, the coordination between Turner Broadcasting and ESPN to set up the broadcast model that they're using, three different sites on the Disney World property. But the NBA has been at the forefront of so many things. And this is just not about restarting the season, too. It's about the social message that is going out, and the players and the league and back and fortified and unified in their message. So there's a lot of moving parts to the restart and all the things, the climate that the country finds themselves in right now with the pandemic and social justice. So the restart is part of the story, and the other parts have made it one of those things that will continue to evolve and I'm sure be very newsy here for the next couple months.
It was very powerful watching the broadcast last night because there was a feeling of pride in trying to get some normalcy back in our lives with all that we've been through the last few months with the fight for social justice and then also clearly the pandemic that has flipped all of our lives upside down since the middle of March. When you were in that arena last night broadcasting the game with Reggie Miller, what were you feeling?
Well, I was feeling all of that, and you can't help but feel it because it's on player uniforms, it's on the floor, and you know the story going into the game, just how important this issue is for all of us. But for these athletes in this league, they have tried to be at the very beginning of the conversation, and they have embraced that. And that has been one of the big stories coming down here. And then the other part, of course, is no fans and trying to create for these players a working environment, a playing environment that makes sense And the league has hit the right tone, I think, on all of these points so far. They've really taken suggestions. They have used technology. They have used social media. They have questioned. They have tried to improve. Every night that we see a game nationally televised, there has been another addition added. Something has come up in the game before, the day or night before, that that they've tried to implement. So it's an evolving story that may not really have its form, you know, final form until we get deep in the playoffs, maybe to the NBA Finals. But certainly there's a lot coming out of Orlando right now from the NBA, and I think everyone would universally, like you just did, say it's been very, very positive. From the testing of the players, no virus-infected players so far that have stayed in the bubble, that is. The quarantine protocol followed by media and players and management has been followed and rules have been obeyed. It's been a very, very big success on every front so far.
You're a legendary broadcaster. We're talking to Kevin Harlan. But in these times, you know that really players and broadcasters control the energy without fans in there. Is there anything that you're doing differently right now in your approach in calling these games, knowing how important it is to that your microphone really means in a game like this?
Well, there are two things, Zach, and that was my first game last night. So I'm just, of course, the league opened last night. So, but we had done a kind of a run through on Tuesday, but really didn't call the game per se like we normally would. It was just more just a technical checkout. But there are two things that kind of stand out. Number one, I don't think I'll ever appreciate a crowd more the next time they're in a building, because for a broadcaster, it's like an orchestra. And when you have a big play, you want that crescendo and that buildup and that emotion that a crowd gives a game and a play to kind of fill in the back part of your call. And it's like an orchestra. And it's so important to a broadcaster, and the feel of how big a play and how important a play was at that particular time. The other thing is, we are well, as broadcasters, well off the court. We're up about 40 rows. It's very similar to a big high school gym or a small college gymnasium, and we're at the very top, and you don't have that personal feel of being courtside like we normally are. And when you are courtside, you feel the rhythm and the tempo and the pace of the game, and it influences your call and kind of leads you to where you may go with a call when you see something develop. Well, that now is pretty much gone because you're so far away. You're just trying to get the players right. And we're in a plexiglass cubicle, much like a hockey goal judge sits in an arena. We're in that same kind of setting for protection. Big plexiglass sheets between me and my partner and me and the stats guy. So there's a lot that's different, a lot that we're adapting to, and we will. And really, in the greater scheme of things, these are minor issues. But for a broadcaster, that, you know, it's a part of their kind of the give and take they have individually with the broadcast, they kind of stand out.
Talking to Kevin Harlan right now, was on the call of the Lakers and Clippers game last night. Your biggest takeaway from the actual game last night was what?
Well, that the players are really into it. I mean, they are aggressive. They're playing hard. It's a short course they're running here, Zach. You know, they know that it's not beginning in October, and they got month after month after month after trip after trip after game, you know, ahead of them. This is a very short track here. They've got 8 games for seeding, and then they've got, you know, the playoffs will start. So as compared to October, when they break training camp and start a season and there is no light at the end of the tunnel, here they can touch the light. They can see the end. It's not that far away. And the consequences are enormous. So I really think that these players get it. They're in the best physical shape they can possibly be in at this stage. It will only get better. But this is really like they've had a long layoff and an off season, and they are starting the season, but they're not starting it when the regular season should start. They're kind of starting it, it almost seems like, in the middle of preseason, and the games count. So I'm going to give them a pass here for the next week or so as they get in game shape, as they get a feel for, a lot of teams have retooled and reconstituted their lineups and rosters. They brought in new players, and there's not a great deal of familiarity. And these new players are going to play a prominent role here on the stretch. So, I'm going to wait another couple of weeks before I judge. But if last night is any indication and today is any indication, these players are engaged. They are focused. They are in. They're all in. And I think it's going to make for a very exciting ride.
All throughout the year, the talk nationally has been Bucks, Lakers, and Clippers. When we get to the finish line this year, is that still what you expect? Or in these times, is it expect the unexpected?
Well, here's the thing. You know, this is a neutral floor, so there is no home court. And some teams thrive on their home floor. The 76ers, for instance, have one of the best home records in pro basketball. But on the road, they struggled. Now, every team is on equal footing. Every court is level. The playing surface is even. There is no travel. You're in your same bed, same food, same atmosphere, same everything. So it's a lot different than the regular season that we're used to. So it's kind of like a laboratory. What you're doing is you're taking all these teams, putting them on an even playing surface, and they're saying, go after it. So coaching is more focused. Player focus and player exertion is going to be heightened. And the best team really is going to come out of this. I mean, I really believe that. Unless we have a cataclysmic injury, a knee or something that keeps one of the great superstars out of the tournament that's coming up and on the sideline and off the floor. All things being equal, we're really going to see, you know, a very laboratory-like, you know, the best of the best will truly emerge. It won't be, you know, pushed or persuaded or seduced by a home court or by a long or bad travel schedule or whatever. It's going to be in a laboratory setting, basically, even playing surface, and the best team will survive and win. And I think that's going to be real fascinating.
I know you mentioned Philadelphia, Kevin Harlan, and you're right. At home, they have two losses this year. On the road, they've been a lottery team when you look at their record. I think two of the more intriguing teams, when you look east and west, it's Philadelphia and then it's Houston, and they've been disappointing this year. They've been very disappointing. It's tough for me to buy in, but do you see optimism for those two teams?
Well, Houston is bought into the small ball, and they have no size, and they're all in on that format. And it has never been proven that kind of team can win. But we've never seen a team in the backcourt with the incredible powers and play of Harden and Westbrook, who are both having incredible seasons. So this is a different kind of team than we've ever seen that is kind of the talk of the league. And then one of the best players in the NBA, Ben Simmons, has changed position during the four-month hiatus. He's gone from guard to playing a forward position. Now, he's going to still bring the ball up on fast break opportunities, but he's going to be listed as a four. So here's a quality Philadelphia team that is changing materially the way they're going to go about business, and that's going to be a fascinating story. And then you look at other teams like Toronto. They played a lot without Marc Gasol. They were missing Van Vliet. They were missing some key ingredients. They've been injured all season, but that's the defending champion, and they're great. They're a terrific team. So we've got a lot of great stories here. Every team has something that has happened to it. They've either gotten healthy, they've changed the way they're doing business, they've used the time to help promote the good things they were doing, shore up the things they were lacking in, and hopefully bringing kind of a brand new package to Orlando. So, you know, we're going to see a lot of retooling in the same basic season. That's going to be a great story.
When we go to Zion Williamson from last night, they only let him play 15 minutes. When we went to his debut back in January up against the Spurs, they let him go to 18 minutes. And there was a big conversation then, Kevin Harlan, about managing the minutes of Zion, and I totally get that. Last night, though, when you're fighting for a playoff opportunity to try to get that eighth seed, like, he couldn't go 18, 20 minutes? Did you have a problem with that?
Well, I saw that, and there was really doubt that he was even going to play because he had just come back from a family emergency and had missed 9 days. He had not played in 4 months, and like all these players, they're still trying to get in shape. And we know that he had the meniscus tear in October and only played 19 regular season games. So it wasn't like he had, you know, a veteran attitude and body and an NBA culture around him. You know, he was almost still basically a rookie. And while he is technically a rookie, he is still such a young player with only a year of college under his belt. And we know that they're very cautious with a couple things, the knees certainly, but they're very sensitive too to his weight. And he is a kid that can put on weight. Now, whether he has hit the mark weight-wise they want, or whether he is in the kind of shape they want, I just don't think they wanted to push the envelope for a kid that is so important, not just this year, but for years to come. So I get it, and they're going to be on the side of real caution and conservatism. And I can't say that I fault that. That was an important game, though, last night. There is no doubt about it. And those are the kind of games they got to win if they want to play in the postseason. At the same time, I think they see the big picture, and I think they're really kind of committed to that. And if that is, in fact, the way they do feel, and it is my belief they do feel that way, that I guess it is so hard when you've got a talent like that in a game that's within reach against a team that you need to beat, and all the wins are going to matter for seeding, certainly. These are vital experiences. But I think they feel like, let's get him back. Let's get him a taste. He's been gone. We've got more games coming up. We've got 7 more games to go. He'll have plenty of time to prove himself, and we'll still get a chance to be within 4 games of that number 8 seed, try to get to number 9 and play into a play-in game and a play-in series, best of 2. So we'll find out where they stand. I guess I see both sides of the story. I guess I lean more on what the Pelicans are feeling. Let's look at the big picture here.
Wrap it up with Kevin Harlan. 2 more before we let you go. I know you're all NBA mode right now, but I want to ask you something about the NFL. Antonio Brown got hit with an 8-game suspension today. We're waiting to see if a team's going to pick him up. Do you expect, if there is football this year, for Antonio Brown to at least be on a roster somewhere?
Well, I could see him on a roster, number one, if he's a good citizen. We know that he's had a lot of bumps outside of football, and that is concerning. But he is such an incredible talent that a good team, if they've got one of their best receivers that has gone down, or if they're missing one thing to the passing game, could bring him in. But we know he's a personality. And you get halfway in a season, with the fingers crossed that we get that far into the year, you get halfway in a season, a lot of things are established. Chemistry, all the different protocols that are going on, not with medicine, but just within the team makeup itself, that you would normally find within a team. So, it's going to take a very special circumstance for a team to bring him in, and it's going to take a very special attitude by Antonio Brown to kind of walk a fine line here and be a good citizen, because, like I said, there have been a lot of things that raise your eyebrows in what has happened to him. And I don't fault the NFL at all for doing this. I mean, it had to be done. And there's not a league out there that wouldn't have taken the same stand. But he's a pretty unique talent. He could make a difference on a team. Let's see what these next 8 games bring in terms of the calendar year. And it brings us to, about November 1st or so, and we'll see where he is and where the team is. And it would not surprise me, I guess, if he were on the straight and narrow and a team was in desperate need of some receiving help and he was in shape and they felt he could come in and do something and they could control and give him the kind of guidance that he needs, self-admittedly, he has said, I need, it may work. It may be something that would click.
How'd you react on draft night, by the way, when the Packers did trade up to take Jordan Love with Aaron Rodgers still under contract for 4 years?
Well, we'd seen it before, and Rodgers was in that same position, the rookie, and Brett Favre, is the established quarterback, roughly the same age, roughly the same place drafted, same position. I don't think anything can surprise any of these players. It was just last year that Rodgers signed a $101 million contract to finish off his career and get the big money. So I know he has come into camp and said, eventually we're going to be parting ways. If I were him, I'd say, I'm playing for one of the great franchises in football. We've got something going here. I got a quarterback-friendly head coach. Yeah, they get this guy, but the Packers are smart to look to the future. They've got to. I've had injuries last couple of years. There are no guarantees anyway that Rodgers stays healthy or that this kid's going to pan out. I think you just play the best you can in every given situation. You're as dedicated as you can be. And the future takes care of itself. And Aaron should know that. The comments that have they've come out about, yeah, I took four fingers of tequila after they drafted him. I mean, you know, of course, we all want the story to last forever. But he's a smart guy, and he knows, and he just saw it with Favre. It doesn't last forever. That's the way this business is built. You're always looking for the next, the next, the next. And the Packers are smart. If they feel that strongly about Jordan Love, that he's that kind of quarterback, that they would, number one, trade up and get him in the first round, number two, face whatever kind of personal animosity or insecurity that their established quarterback might feel, if they felt that strongly about the kid to gamble with that pick and that when they needed a lot of help in other areas, it says a lot about the kid they drafted. But at the same time, I just think it tells Aaron Rodgers they're just trying to build a good team here. And I know where I am, and I'd like to play another 4 or 5 years. And this kid may sit another 4 or 5 years. I mean, who knows? And the kid may be a flop. Who knows? You know, he did not have a very good final season in college. So let's just see where this story goes. But I've always said this. I think you take care of your own business. You do the best you can in every situation. And you kind of let life take the natural path it's going to take you and take the situation. And I would think Aaron Rodgers would buy into that scenario.
Last one for Kevin Harlan, and I know you're as diverse as they come as a broadcaster and one of the true legends. Westwood One for Monday Night Football. We see you on TV Sundays of the football season on CBS, NCAA tournament games, the NBA last night on TNT. We've been waiting and waiting for this Monday Night Football team to be announced by ESPN. We found out today it's Steve Levy, Brian Griese, and Louis Riddick. All throughout the last few months, people have been calling in saying, Kevin Harlan, Kevin Harlan, Kevin Harlan, he's got to be the guy that ESPN hires. Was there ever a thought of doing Monday Night Football for ESPN?
Listen, you're talking to the luckiest guy in this business. I have 22 years at CBS. I cherish my relationship. The guy that hired me is still there, Sean McManus. I'm doing the NFL every Sunday on CBS television. I love that gig, and I love doing my radio for Westwood One CBS Radio. I love doing radio. It was my dream when I got in the business, and while I was flattered that people would think that I'd be, you know, in the conversation to be doing the TV on Monday night, I am so blessed to be doing Monday night radio and working with Kurt Warner and being on all these great radio stations, many of which carry your broadcast, Zach, and CBS Sports Radio, that I hope I do this for the rest of my career. I hope nothing changes, and I love where I am. But I think anybody would be flattered that they'd be mentioned for any job, but I love the jobs I have right now, and I'm living the dream every time I put that headset on. So I thank those people for thinking so kindly of my work, but I'm very happy where I am and can't wait for the Monday night schedule to take hold and get the NFL season underway.
Well, I say it all the time, each and every time I see you. We all know the legendary broadcaster you are, but you're a better person, and it's been great to get to know you over the years. Really do appreciate the time today, and I'm sure we'll catch up with you soon. You and your family stay safe, all right?
Zach, same to you. Thank you so much. I've watched you grow in this business. I'm so proud of what you've accomplished, and I'll keep listening, and I hope we cross paths soon.
You got it. All the best. There's Kevin Harlan. It's the Zach Yelp Show on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show. The Zach Gelb Show is on the air across the nation on CBS Sports Radio. Here's Zach Gelb.
We just talked with Kevin Harlan about Antonio Brown, 8-game suspension today. That 8 games, of course, is for multiple violations of the league's personal conduct policy. Pro Football Talk just posted an article that Antonio Brown, according to Tom Pelissero of NFL Media, has accepted his 8-game suspension and isn't expected to appeal. That's a little bit surprising to me. Now, he's 100% in the wrong, but with how frequently Antonio Brown is out of touch with reality and then also threatens to retire or actually says he's retiring and then we know he flip-flops. That to me says that he wanted a decision, he got the decision, and now he's going to accept with it, and we'll see if he can get back to being the great football player that he once was. Now, I'm very skeptical of that. There's zero reason to trust Antonio Brown. But some of the details here, Pro Football Talk says that his suspension begins week one, regardless if Brown is on a roster or not, and it will last through week eight, even if he's not signed, and his team's eighth game if he is signed. So that's something to look at. If you're a team and you bring in Antonio Brown, you're going to miss him for the first 8 weeks of the season, if we even get 8 weeks of the season this year for the National Football League. Mike Florio points out the league could extend Brown's suspension if further violations are found related to an ongoing civil suit in Florida. And also, in addition to this, Brown's suspension stems from an accusation that Brown harassed a woman who went public with concerns about Brown's behavior and a no-contest plea to burglary and battery charges from a January incident in Florida. So, AB, he has not played since that Week 2 game, September 15th. It was his only game with the Patriots up against Miami, where he did catch a touchdown pass from Tom Brady in the left side of the end zone down in South Florida. So now we get to the question, would you bring in Antonio Brown? And when I think of that question and I dissect that question, I personally wouldn't want him on my team, but a team is going to bring him in because this man for a long time was the creme de la creme at the wide receiver position in the National Football League. Now, he has lost his way. He was disgraceful at the end in Pittsburgh. He was disgraceful in Oakland. He was disgraceful in New England. He's had a lot of problems off the field, and the only one that he could blame is himself. And who truly knows what's true and what isn't true? But we know in this league that usually you get a second chance, and if you're that good, you'll get a third, fourth, or fifth chance. And that's kind of where Antonio Brown is at. And if you think about an eight-game suspension, and who knows how many games we see this year in the NFL, if you're a team and you're looking at this at low risk, high reward, that even if he freaks out and does something wrong, your team could survive without him. For example, like the Seahawks, like the Ravens, both teams who are Super Bowl contenders, I think you could bring him in. And if you think about it, you don't know how long he's going to last. You don't know when he's going to really just freak out and something's going to change because he's such a mercurial person. But an eight-game suspension, he's got to be a model citizen during those eight games. Really, from now until the start of the season and through that eight-game suspension. And if he does one more thing wrong, and this suspension could even grow even further, depending on what happens with this lawsuit going on right now. But if he does everything the right way, and you get him back after week eight going into week nine, you just need him to behave for week 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, and then you get him in the postseason. So is a team going to wait until you get later into the year, or do you go take him right now? I do think there's going to be a market for him. And you start to think of teams, Ravens and Seahawks come to mind. Packers just lost Devin Funchess. They have not really surrounded Rodgers with much other than Devontae Adams and Aaron Jones. If you're Green Bay, would you make an aggressive move? Would you make a bold move? And would you bring in Antonio Brown? Can you imagine Devontae Adams and Antonio Brown with Aaron Rodgers? If Brown could not be such a fool off the field, that would be unbelievable. Have fun trying to defend that. Especially with Aaron Jones in your backfield, Jamal Williams too, and then Dylan out of BC that they just drafted. So would a team like the Ravens bring him in? I think they would. A team like Seattle, I think they would. Packers, I'm not sure about. If you stay in that division, I know the Vikings just lost Stephon Diggs. They drafted Justin Jefferson in the first round. You have Adam Thielen there. If you're Minnesota, would you bring in Antonio Brown? How about this one? Well, I'm going to throw a team out there. How about the Houston Texans? Now, they got rid of DeAndre Hopkins. It was absolutely foolish. They're hoping that Brandon Cooks is healthy this year. They're hoping that David Johnson is healthy this year. They're hoping that Will Fuller is healthy this year. They signed Randall Cobb as well. Can you imagine if Bill O'Brien brings in Antonio Brown? that could be a move, depending on how you feel about him, that could win over a lot of fans in Houston. And then I'll throw out two more teams. The 49ers? Would San Francisco bring him in? And if you bring him into San Francisco, and a lot of places you bring him in, he instantly becomes your best wide receiver. But for San Francisco, you got Deebo Samuel, you got Kendrick Bourne, and Brandon Ayuk, who you just drafted out of Arizona State. Would you bring Antonio Brown into San Francisco, knowing that if it doesn't work, you were still able to get to a Super Bowl last year without him? And I'll throw out one more team, because who knows what the Brown contract would be. I would imagine it's very little guaranteed money, and it's not going to be a big deal with the lack of trust. And you saw New England got burned, even though they did agree to a settlement. This is a team that's always in play for every player. They are in play for each and every player with the team that they have constructed. They don't need him. And it would already make a team that's unstoppable even more unstoppable. But imagine if Kansas City brings him in. You line up, and I know Damian Williams is now out, and they're going to be relying at the running back position on Clyde Edwards-Helaire. But if you line up with Mahomes as your quarterback, with Tyreek Hill, Sammy Watkins, Travis Kelce, and Antonio Brown, they're already impossible to stop. They already come back from down 24 in a snap of a finger and down 10 twice in the postseason. Imagine if you put Antonio Brown in the Kansas City Chiefs. I don't think the Buccaneers are going to bring him in. Bruce Arians has made it clear that they're not interested in him. But does Brady maybe go out there and make an extra push to try to get him in? And you already have Gronkowski, Mike Evans, and Chris Godwin. So those are some teams to look out for. Right now, I'd say the early leaders are the Ravens and the Seahawks, because he's worked out with Russell Wilson. He's worked out with Lamar Jackson. Lamar Jackson has made his case publicly this week to bring in Antonio Brown. But would a team like Green Bay, who you don't expect to make that move, would they make that move? 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. That's CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line, and it's sponsored by our good friends at Geico. Did you know that right now Geico is offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies? That's on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Visit geico.com to learn more. So give me a team at Zach Yelba on Twitter, also on our phone lines, that you think could make a ton of sense for Antonio Brown. And our poll question today on Twitter too, which you could vote as well, who should sign Antonio Brown? Packers, Seahawks, Ravens, or other are the options. Right now, 26.1% Ravens and other, 20% the Packers, and then the Seahawks at 27.8%. So you got the Seahawks in first, Ravens and other in the 2-3 spot tied, and then you got the Packers in fourth at 20%.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show. The Zach Gelb Show is on the air across the nation on CBS Sports Radio.
He may be a jackass. He may be a pain. He may be someone that you don't want on the football team. But when I think of Antonio Brown, and you could think of a lot of things, in the sentence, though, it's also great football player. And when you put up 6 to 7 great years in the National Football League, with how short the career span is for a lot of these players, that's enough to put him in the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Here's Zach Gelb.
It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. We'll see if any team does sign Antonio Brown leading up to the start of the football season. Portland-Memphis is a final. Portland wins by 5 in overtime, a buck 40 to a buck 35. Jaren Jackson for the Grizzlies goes for 33. Ja Morant with 22. When you look at Portland, we all know they know how to score. Carmelo Anthony, 21. Nurkic, 18. Lillard, 29. C.J. McCollum, 33. You also, off the bench, with 17 points. That did come from Gary Trent Jr. But the most important news, actually, is something that I just saw right after the game, and this is from Jared Greenberg, who did a good job last night interviewing LeBron James for TNT after the Lakers did defeat the Clippers, where LeBron was tremendous in the final final 2 minutes, where he missed a shot, Clippers didn't box him out, got the putback, game-winning bucket. And then you saw the defensive play on the transition from Kawhi to Paul George. But Jared Greenberg, who's down in the bubble, just had this tweet, and it's about Blazer center Yusuf Nurkic. He just revealed post-game that his 67-year-old grandmother is actually in a coma, suffering from COVID-19. He is considering leaving the bubble to be with her. Nurkic is pleading with people to take the virus seriously and wear a mask. And we do send our prayers to the family of Yusuf Nurkic, and we hope everything ends up being okay. But even though we do get the sport back, and I know a lot of times we take basketball players for granted and we just expect them to show up and entertain us, they do have families too. And just like us right now, as we're all going through this terrible pandemic, the players are as well. And I think it's important to realize the risk that these players are taking. Yes, I know it's easy to say, oh, they make millions and millions of dollars, so just shut up and play. But these guys are leaving their families in the middle of a pandemic. So let's be thoughtful of that as well. And if he has to leave the bubble, I totally understand it. If I was in that situation, and right now it's not COVID-19 related, but my grandfather has had a bunch of health scares and has been in and out of the hospital for the last 2-3 months. And it's very stressful on the family. And my grandfather, you know, is 93, I want to say. Yeah, 93 right now. So he has lived a great life, and we hope he's going to continue to live for many more years. But for Nurkic, grandmother's at 67 and is dealing with COVID-19 right now and is in a coma. So that's why when we tell you to wear a mask, even if you don't want to wear a mask for others. And right now, with all that's going on in the world, if a player wants to leave, I totally understand leaving. Because you have families at home, and I know it's great and fun to play a game, but your family is of the utmost importance. So for the Nurkic family, I hope everything ends up being okay, but we're definitely thinking about you right now. And if he's to leave the bubble, no one should second guess that. No one should be critical of that, and I would totally be understanding. And you could only – I know that we break down the games and we like to have fun. It's nice to have some normalcy back. But in a time like this, when you think of Nurkic now, it's going to be impossible to not think about anything other than his family. And we're going to see players come and go from the bubble. You know, I know we like to have fun with the Lou Williams situation with him going into Magic City, which was not a smart decision, but he had to go to a funeral. And there's going to be family emergencies. Players are going to have to leave. They have a plan that has been working so far when players do leave. But you can't always be fully committed to the sport, even though it's your job. There are family things to look out as well. So, once again, wish nothing but the best for Nurkic's family. And, yes, you did see Portland today get a win, 140-135. That's a big game, Portland and Memphis. With right now Portland being the ninth seed, you have the Pelicans lose last night, and Memphis currently being the eighth seed as well. You have another game going on, and that is Boston-Milwaukee. That is in the final few minutes of the first half. The Bucks are up 57-44. Let's see what Giannis Antetokounmpo, the Greek freak, has done so far. And he should win the NBA MVP. You see what he does in the defensive end. And I know LeBron's having a great season, but all around, consistently from start to finish, I do think Giannis has been the most valuable player in basketball this year. 12 minutes for the Greek freak. 14 points. You see Chris Middleton in 14 minutes. He has 12 points as well. So Antetokounmpo and Middleton off to a very strong start. Ersan Ilyasova, 7 points off the bench. You got Brooke Lopez with 5, Wesley Matthews with 6, and Dante DiVincenzo, who was sensational for Villanova last time they won a national championship and ended up becoming a first-round pick. He has 5 points in 11 minutes as well. You look at Boston, Kemba Walker with 10. Jaylen Brown was 7. Gordon Hayward was 6. Jason Tatum off to a slow start. 1-7 from the field. 0-2 from 3. Only 3 points. And off the bench, Marcus Smart has 12 points. So we'll keep you updated on this. Right now it's 59-49 with 2:13 to go in the second quarter. Milwaukee up 10 on the Boston Celtics. Real quickly, I want to squeeze in a college football point. I saw the other day that Lincoln Riley signed a contract extension, that's going to keep him at Oklahoma through 2025. There's always rumors and talk about Lincoln Riley becoming an NFL head coach, and why wouldn't there be that talk where you see his first 3 years taking over for the great Bob Stoops? You've seen him go to three college football playoff appearances, not get a victory, but go to three college football playoff appearances in the semifinals, and also produce three Heisman Trophy finalists, two Heisman Trophy winners. When you do see Baker Mayfield and Kyler Murray win the Heisman Trophy at Oklahoma, and all three of these players are transfers, and then Jalen Hurts be a finalist this past season. So you start to wonder, with Matt Rhule going from college to the NFL, from Temple to Baylor, now on a lucrative contract, seven-year deal, I think he's like the fifth or sixth highest-paid coach in the league now at Carolina. You wonder who that next college coach is to go from college to the NFL. Lincoln will always have the NFL there for him, but I don't expect him to go to the NFL anytime soon. You're in a very comfortable job right now. You have done a great job at Oklahoma. I would not leave if I'm Lincoln Riley. I would not right now. Now, I'm not going to say that he's never going to leave, but right now I wouldn't. So you start to figure out college coaches that would go to the NFL. You always look at Jim Harbaugh. Now, that's his alma mater. And even though Harbaugh has improved the win-loss record of the program and you're much better than Brady Hoke and Rich Rod, you still have not ever defeated Ohio State, and you have to defeat Ohio State. You cannot leave your alma mater and expect to go back to your alma mater if you've never defeated Ohio State as a head coach. And also, I would also say that you probably have to see Michigan in a college football playoff appearance. Now, he could leave, but I don't think he's going to leave quite yet. But if it continues to get ugly and Ryan Day or back to Urban Meyer continues to beat his, beat him up and kick his tushy, then maybe Harbaugh says, okay, this is getting ugly, before they fire me, and you don't want to get fired by your alma mater. Maybe you do end up wanting to walk away. I don't think they're there yet, but right now I would say Harbaugh's going to try to get the job done. You see Urban Meyer, we mentioned him, no longer at Ohio State as a head football coach. He didn't get the USC job. USC job didn't become available. If Notre Dame opens up, maybe if Brian Kelly goes to the pros, or if Notre Dame moves on from him, would Urban Meyer be an NFL head coach? I know there was some talks about him with the Cowboys, but Jerry Jones wanted a proven NFL coach and ended up getting that with Mike McCarthy. You've heard Daniel Jeremiah suggest Dan Mullen. You always hear rumors with David Shaw. How about Ryan Day? Ryan Day was on the Eagles staff, and also San Francisco, too, with Chip Kelly. Pat Fitzgerald has declined interviews, but it's got some looks. I don't think Saban's going back to the NFL anytime soon. I think this is his last job at Alabama. Dabo, don't expect it. And Ed Orgeron, obviously, those are two picture-perfect college football coaches. So some names to consider there when you look to see who's going to be the next one to make the jump from college to the pros.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.